Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
This is All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, March 29th. I'm coming to you live today from the headquarters of current Mayor Dwayne Warren. He's running for re-election here in Orange, New Jersey. He'll join us later on in the hour. He's out canvassing now, and so I'm meeting him here, and we'll talk about how it's going on the campaign trail and what he could look forward to in the coming days. You know, all kinds of accusations that are swirling around now about, him being a part of a PAC and linked to it and negative campaigning on both sides, or at least on two sides of the issue here. But before we get into that, we're going to have a discussion tonight about the national race. There's a lot going on right now in the national race, as you all know. Ted Cruz mainly, and Donald Trump. I mean, last week it was about the wives, the tweeting of pictures, very little about policy. And this week it seems as though the major issues concerning the election have to do with, with the campaign manager now. Again, not about the issues. And I got to tell you, and I don't think it's a surprise to anybody who is listening or people who follow me on social media that, I am right now a Bernie Sanders supporter. But what I will tell you is before I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, I am a supporter of free speech. I am a supporter of one man, one vote. And so as I look at what's taking place on the GOP side, we talked about this before, that Donald Trump is nothing more than a manifestation of what the GOP has done for decades now, right? Where they have been the of complaint. And through that, Donald Trump has masticized, to the very walls of that campaign, of that party, and is now in the process of imploding that party. What I will say also is that as I looked at that video of the woman, of the reporter, allegedly being grabbed by the arm, I'll tell you that, the courts have to tread very, very lightly here. Listening to what Donald Trump says about, trying to evade the press after giving a Q&A session and then walking away and indicating that there are no more questions, and then having the woman continue to follow him and, one might even harass him, and having his campaign manager attempt to create separation between Donald Trump and a persistent and overly persistent reporter, if he were to, to do, what one would say civil service does or anybody else. I mean, I've been at stores where, trying to get in line, for super rush sales, and the person standing at the front of the door, kind of moves the crowd and maybe put his hand on somebody. So I think that we should be really careful. I think that we should also listen very closely to what the original allegations were before there was evidence of a videotape in which he said she was dragged to the ground. And so I think that, and she knows that she wasn't dragged to the ground. And so one has to now put into question, her veracity. Certainly, he very well may have, reached out and grabbed her in order to keep her from pursuing Mr. Trump. whether or not, you know, he was attempting in a, you know, in a vicious way to assault her is something else. So I would hope that they would, you know, would tread really, really lightly with this case. Otherwise, I can see very quickly that you'll have a ton of cases out there where folks who, you know, either, you know, whether somebody cutting somebody in line or any number of other things that might cause a, you know, a lawsuit. So, you know, that's what I'll say about that. Now, on to the Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton saga. I have rather spirited debates on social media with a lot of folks who frequent my page. And this is what I'll say to everybody. Campaigns are about perception. They are about momentum, and they, you know, and so in the beginning, I would say that Hillary Clinton and all of her handlers tried to create the perception of Hillary Clinton being the inevitable Democratic nominee, and they tried to get momentum early on, and complicit in this effort has been mainstream media. And so perception and momentum have played a huge role. So when you saw early on in the campaign that Bernie Sanders, you know, was competitive both in Iowa and New Hampshire, it kind of put a wrinkle in this whole theory of Hillary Clinton being inevitable. Now, for politicos, you knew that Hillary Clinton going down to the down south, that was in fact her firewall, and that she was going to win those states. For the folks who are low information voters or novelists, what you will you know, what you need to know is that they expected Hillary to win. Bernie Sanders expected Hillary to win, and that's why Bernie Sanders didn't spend a tremendous amount of time in the South. In fact, he was maligned by the media for leaving South Carolina and moving, going back up to the north, northern states to canvass. And they were asking why he wasn't spending the money, and they tried to paint this picture that Bernie Sanders didn't care about black people, and that's why he left the South. Well, at some point, Bernie Sanders, much like Hillary Clinton, who has realized certain states that she's not going to win, and so she doesn't even heavily compete in those states. And nobody's saying that Hillary Clinton doesn't like white people. The fact is, strategically, it doesn't make sense for a candidate to spend a tremendous amount of time when they've done polling, and they spend thousands and tens of thousands of dollars on polling. And then they get that data, and he realizes that him being there isn't going to move the needle. And so, yes, he left. But what you do see now, and what I find most intriguing about this campaign is the continued exposing of a conspiracy. And we've been taught to believe that a conspiracy is a bad thing. And so people say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. But one does have a theory, right? When you look at things that are taking place and you say, well, you know, if you have more than one person who has the same idea and they're moving in a particular direction, then they're conspiring to do that. And so as I look at the data, I theorize that conspiracy. And so when you look at the blackout that has taken place over the last week, well, in fact, for most of Bernie Sanders' campaign, but in particular over the last week, when you look at the blackout that has occurred, you realize that there is, in fact, a conspiracy. Channel 7, Channel 2, MSNBC, CNN. Bernie Sanders has won the last 5 out of 6 contests. And so some will argue that they were caucuses and he should have won those. Well, then why can't we have the same argument and say, well, those were southern states and Hillary Clinton should have won those? So if you're going to give her the credit for winning the states down south, then why not give Bernie Sanders the credit for winning the states in the north, northeast? But beyond not giving the credit, what they continue to do, even after he just beat her down in those last contests, won five of them, just a clean sweep. They asked him, when are you going to drop out? And when you look at the delegate count, I believe he's less than 200 delegates. And we're talking now about the pledge delegates. We're not talking about the super delegates. He's fewer than 200 delegates behind Hillary Clinton. And Bernie Sanders is moving into the strength of the country where you have more progressive voters. And we see when we look through the numbers that Hillary Clinton polls very poorly against, when you look at progressives. She doesn't, she's not strong, as strong as she'd like to be among white women and white men, certainly 45 and below. She's having trouble with independence, and that's the area that Bernie Sanders is moving in now. So they're essentially asking Bernie Sanders to quit as he's moving into the heart and the strength of what his campaign message is all about. So no, Bernie Sanders has no intentions on quitting. He is going to go, and he's going to show that he can compete. Beyond that, what you have to understand is that as he moves into these states and gets closer in the delegate count, oh, and this is a conspiracy that I'd like you to take into consideration. The mainstream media has decided that they are just going to lump in the superdelegates because prematurely the superdelegates have tentatively said that they are in support of Hillary Clinton. But we need to do it again, not so much for the politicos, but really for the novice as well as the low information voter. We have to understand, and again, pardon me for the noise, but I am, as I said earlier, I'm broadcasting live from Orange from Mayor Dwayne Warren's campaign headquarters, and he's due in any moment from the campaign trail to spend a little time with us talking about the election and the culture of the election here in Orange. But as I was saying, let me not be remiss for any listeners to call in. You can call in at 646-668-2232. Again, that's 646-668-2232 if you'd like to join the conversation. But what I'll say is part of the conspiracy that is in play has to do with these superdelegates. And when we look in 08 and we see that Hillary at that time had the superdelegates lined up with her, but as the campaign started to shift, those superdelegates aligned themselves with Barack Obama. Because at the end of the day, the superdelegates, one, should be voting in alignment with their constituency. So if their constituency has voted overwhelmingly for a candidate, it really is, I would say that the superdelegate, I'm just going to leave it at that, the superdelegate should align themselves in voting accordingly. But now, on to who the superdelegates are. The superdelegates are elected officials. They are essentially part of the very establishment that Bernie Sanders' campaign is running against. So when you look at the fact that you have these elected officials who have received large amounts of campaign contributions from the DNC, in particular from the same big bank, Wall Street banks that Bernie Sanders continues to highlight as he talks about campaign reform, as he talks about breaking up Wall Street, as he talks about the mass amount of wealth going to the very top and not trickling down, but in fact asphyxiating the middle class. Those very people are part of the superdelegate crowd. And so these superdelegates, the knee-jerk reaction, of course, was to align themselves with the person who was an establishment candidate on the Democrat side, and that was Hillary Clinton. But I think that what will happen is as they look inside the numbers, and this is where it really counts, it's really inside the numbers when they look and see as I said, Hillary Clinton doesn't poll well. Firstly, she pours poorer against Donald Trump, Kasich, and Cruz than does Bernie Sanders. So that would be one of the things when Bernie Sanders takes this thing to the convention that he's going to say. He's going to also talk about the wide margins that he's been able to win in progressive states. He's going to talk about the fact that the Democrats have to have a progressive message if they're going to win the White House. And Hillary Clinton has not been able to garner that progressive vote. He's going to further talk about Hillary Clinton's vulnerability in the 45 and under crowd. And Hillary hasn't been able to make those numbers up. So as she's been running her campaign, trust me, even though she's won those states, they're looking at all of those numbers because those numbers will be key. Key why? Because as Bernie Sanders said, and it's been said even before Bernie, when there's high voter turnout, Democrats win. When there's low voter turnout, Democrats lose. And when you look at this race so far, this primary race, Donald Trump has been the driving force to getting people to the polls. In fact, the number of Republicans that have come to the polls now have shattered the records of Obama in 08. So when we cheer the hard work of the DNC, the Obama campaign efforts to drive high voter turnout, the voter turnout now in this primary on the Democrat side has been lower than the Republican turnout in 08. And conversely, the voter turnout for the Republicans now is much higher than the Obama turnout in 08. So all of that is a recipe for disaster when you talk about the general election in November. And so those are the things that Bernie Sanders is going to go to the convention and talk about. And I don't believe that Hillary Clinton is going to have an answer for them. And so then I believe that those superdelegates are going to begin to shift. I believe that Bernie Sanders, when he gets to the convention, will be fewer than 50 pledged delegates behind Hillary. Superdelegates will have to make a decision about, you know, whether they want to win the White House or whether they want to stand on principle for the establishment. So it is all very, very exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. What we're going to do is we're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to spend a little time and we're going to talk about what's going on here in the state of New Jersey. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Everyone likes data because when you have more data, you have more freedom. Freedom to do whatever. That's why AT&T is offering you 15 gigabytes for $100 plus $15 for each line. Because the more data you have, the more freedom you can enjoy. Freedom to post more memories, download more fun, and share what matters most with who matters most. 15 gigs of data for $100 plus $15 for each line at AT&T. What more could you want? I sure can't think of anything. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come in now and get the all-new LG V10, designed to capture, edit, and share high-quality video.
Pricing is monthly for service on smartphones on AT&T Next. Other pricing options available, overage monthly, and other charges and restrictions apply. See a store for details.
Eric Dawson. I'm back. This is Tuesday, March 29th. This is All Things Political. As I indicated to you guys listening, I apologize for the noise in the background, but I am live at the headquarters of Mayor Duane Warren here in Orange, New Jersey, and the mayor will be joining us soon. He's out on the campaign trail, knocking on doors, doing it the old-fashioned way. So when he does join us, we'll talk about the culture of the campaign here in Orange, you know, and ask him some questions about, you know, what he believes his chances are of regaining, you know, his seat. But what I want to talk about now is New Jersey. And, you know, I mean, we know that Governor Chris Christie is on his way out, and, you know, he's actually spending a lot of time with Donald Trump, the GOP candidate for, for president. And I'd imagine that Governor Christie, you know, hopes to prolong his political career in the event that Donald Trump is elected president. But in the meantime, what we have is a fight that's going on right now, in the state. Well, there's several that are taking place, but the one that I want to talk about right now is a headline that I saw with Sweeney, Senator Ruiz, Senator Rice, calling for the state to fund lead testing in Newark. And I don't know if it's just in Newark that they're going to ultimately be asking for it, but I can tell you that given, you know, the crisis in Newark, and folks continue to evoke Flint, Michigan when they're talking about the crisis in Newark, has been a crisis that has been going on for quite some time. And so in the news today, there's talk about the Democrats move to offer schools $3 million in reimbursement for performing a biannual test for lead, in addition, asking for $20 million, which would be appropriated from the Clean Energy Fund for water filters at schools affected by lead pipes. But here's my question. I've spoken for over 20 years with folks who say now that they knew about this lead 20 or so years ago, and their memos now that are out that show it. There's a current candidate running for the Newark School Board who has indicated that when she was previously on the board roughly 20 years ago, that she personally was responsible for shutting down nearly a dozen or so water fountains because of the high level content. So the question that I have is, why are these senators, state senators, moving in the direction that they're moving now? And why haven't they been so been boisterous in the years past? Why did we wait for this thing to reach this level? There's a memo that had been circulated, back in 04, I believe it was, where the janitors in the schools were given a directive to flush the pipes by running the water for three or so minutes to limit the lead content that was being delivered. So my question again is, where were the senators protecting these children? Why just now are they talking about this issue? I think that we need to figure that out. I'm happy that Ruiz, Rice, and Sweeney are on this now, but we do need to question it. We need to question because, you know, for me, and you all know that that a big my mantra is provoking accountability. And so when I look at this, I question how much of it is really about the kids and how much of it is about grandstanding. We know we have a gubernatorial race that's coming up, and all of these people will be positioning themselves to be key players within the election. We're joined in the studio now by Mayor Warren. I want to finish this point, and then we're going to take a break, and we're going to bring Mayor Warren on. But I do wonder what their motive is. Again, I'm happy that they have involved themselves in this fight to improve the conditions of water. But what I would also say is this, that as we're looking at the water crisis taking place in Newark, it's not just the schools, and that's what they're talking about. But it's the delivery system, right? It is the lead pipes that are delivering the water. And so one would imagine that it is, you know, any building that has lead pipes going into it, that water, whether it's a residential building or whether it's a commercial building, that delivery system may be pushing water with high lead level content in it into those buildings. So I say don't just limit it to students being tested. I say that all Newark residents have to be tested. And I think that the senators need to jump on that bandwagon and not just the bandwagon of testing students. So, I mean, that's the piece that I have to say about that. And I hope also that as we get into this, all of the candidates who will be running for governor will weigh in. I know that I saw a headline in the paper yesterday where Essex County Executive Joe DeVincenzo said that he would consider running for governor. And so I would love to, you know, have him join us on the show and talk about, you know, what his thoughts are. And now, you know, and not just in Newark, right, because he is the county executive. So my question is, what's the infrastructure throughout the county? What's the infrastructure in Irvington, in Orange, in East Orange, in South Orange, and, you know, some of the newer communities where you have or suburban communities where you have newer homes? I would imagine that they have gotten rid of those lead pipes. But even the older buildings, they are municipal buildings, or county buildings, may need to be reviewed. So, I would love to have him on. And you know, I think that this is going to be a subject that I'm going to stay on for quite some time, figure out what's going on with that water. And now what we're going to do is we're going to take another break. And then when we come back, we're going to be on with Mayor Warren.
If you're a business owner and you have safety or loss prevention concerns, contact BBSI today. We provide you with both armed and unarmed guards, as well as other security solutions to keep persons and property safe from harm. BBSI can also investigate and let you know if a significant other is cheating on you. BBSI is the premier industry service provider with active and retired law enforcement trained personnel ready to get you answers. Mention Eric and Osmond, Real Talk Radio, when you call and get a free consultation for services. Call 1-800-493-1859 or visit our website at bbsillc.com. That's bbsillc.com today. BBSI, the detective agency you can trust.
Welcome back to All Things Political. As I indicated, I am here at the headquarters of Mayor Dwayne Warren, and he just got back from the campaign trail, and this is a live show. It's not taped, so he left the mic to go get some water to refresh himself. But the things that I want to talk to him about when he comes back, as I was walking through the campaign headquarters, he had posters here which talked about the new parks that are here for the children. He talked about the on the posters that are on the wall. There's a poster that speaks to the public library reopening. There's another poster that talks about the Office of Employment and Training. There's another one I see here that talks about the Orange Rec Center, more public safety officers, and then the initiative of keeping Orange clean. So first, I want to welcome you to the show, Mayor Warren. Thank you for taking the time out. I know whenever it's light outside, what you really want to spend your time doing is knocking on doors, pressing the flesh, kissing babies, and getting those votes in. So I appreciate you taking the time, dude.
No, thank you for allowing me to come and knock on the mic to the many listeners that you have who have raised great issues, who have helped us to mold our campaign message and our responses to the issues. So thank you and your listening audience for their input and their drive to make sure that everything I can do to make Orange great.
Absolutely, man. So I want to talk about these posters. I mean, I walked in and I saw the stuff, you know, so usually residents want to know, what have you done for me lately, right? When you, you know, whether you're running, you know, or running for re-election, they say, well, okay, you know, city services, you know, quality of life. Those are the kinds of issues. And when I look at the posters on the walls, they all seem to speak to quality of life, right? The new parks for children, the public library reopening, you know, the mayor's office of employment and training, you know, the rec center. So let's talk about those kinds. Let's talk about those things.
Well, first, there's nothing more pressing in terms of priority to me than orange families. As I go door to door and I listen to our residents, and the key thing that comes on me all the time is, what are we doing to make sure Orange is a family-friendly place? If you want people to come here to live, you have to have outlets for their families. And certainly I prioritize children, because I believe we build strong children, we build a strong community. And so our dollars, in terms of how we prioritize and in terms of the grants we go after, you'll see that they've been family-focused and quality-of-life-focused.
Mm-hmm.
But our dual threat is the fact that we have generated enough development that my three-tier plan of stabilizing taxes, getting development, and then driving taxes down is working. You'll see some developments that will come online that will get our first phase of actually trying to stabilize taxes and looking for the tax decrease. As we put properties back up on the roll, as we get people to pay their fair share, we're starting to see a benefit to our taxpayers across the board. But once we do have families come here, we have to have outlets for them. And so parks and recreation are important to us. But not only that, during our summer, I take pride in the fact that we have a summer program, the Circle of Excellence, that provides academic training during the day and athletics and recreation in the afternoon. This is something that we need because, as you know, that the standardized testing can only be overcome if we have the kind of training that we have all year round.
Mm-hmm.
And we've looked at the studies, and it's very clear that if you let children stay off from the summer, if they're not reading during the summer, if they're not doing computation, if they're not being challenged mentally over the summer, they're not going to do as well as they could in school in the year. And so we make that a large component. Academic instruction is a large component of our summer program. And if you look at things like the library, we've expanded the use of the library. It's not just a library. It's a community center. It's a place where you can go to our new computers and our smart board to look for jobs, for programming that we do in the library. So we've made the most use of our library as we could. And it's really something where you didn't have it for a period of time, and you said to yourself, if it ever comes back, I'm always going to make sure that I get full use of our library. So closing it for the period that it was closed was hurtful to our community. But once we opened it, we jammed it full of activities and resources for all of our residents.
Okay. So So talk to me about this rec center. Is it built? Is it being built?
The rec center is, you know, the old YWCA.
Mm-hmm.
Due to some fiscal mismanagement by the board that was there,
mm-hmm.
it became available for sale. The sale price was about $1.8 million as a public entity, and through some negotiations, we got it down to $1.5 million. And the key thing that our residents did not want was they didn't want to fund this out of taxpayer dollars. They didn't want it to be part of a tax levy, and which was reasonable, especially in spite of the fact that there were resources that are there that if we go and compete for them and we advocate for them, we should get and offset our taxes. That's exactly what I did. I went to the governor and the state legislature and demanded that we get the kind of access to services that other communities get. And I was able to garner $2.5 million to not only purchase the Y, but then to refurbish it, to make sure we build out the swimming pool so that we have a first-class activity center, first-class recreation center for all of our residents. And we did this with no taxpayer dollars whatsoever. And it was something that was necessary for our community, something that they asked for, something that they didn't know could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you advocate and you have skilled people in office and they're willing to use their skill and their expertise on behalf of their constituency, it'll happen. And that's what happened in the city of Orange. And so we're going to have a recreation center. It's going to be first class. All of us will be able to use it. It'll be a place that will generate revenue because of the number of programs that are chomping at the bit to use our space. So it's something I'm looking forward to, our residents are looking forward to, and something that's well-deserved and needed.
Cool. So listen, man, this platform, I'm building to be able to, you know, to bring you guys to speak to our listeners so that they get an understanding of not only how government works, but specifically how it's working for them. And I got to tell you, last week we launched All Things Political, and I was fortunate enough to have Mayor Tony Voss from Irvington.
Yes, my friend.
And so when I talked to Mayor Voss, because I remember, man, and also coming up in Orange, too. I remember being a kid and, you know, walking up into Orange or walking up into Irvington, and it was a different Orange then. It was a different Irvington then. And so when Mayor Voss was running, I said, look, man, can you do one thing for me? I said, I hated it growing up because I didn't, you know, I was rebellious, and so I didn't want to get tickets and things like that. But I do remember driving up into Irvington Center and you not being able to double park and you not being able to do certain kinds of things. And I said, they would ticket you. I said, and now being older, you realize how those little things promote a quality of life because people just understand that they can't get them done. So in my interview with Mayor Voss, he said that they ramped up tickets and in the last 3 months, they've garnered $700,000 in new revenue, which I thought was incredible. Are you guys doing anything like that to work on improving quality of life
here? One of our biggest revenue investments was the ordering of new parking meters.
Okay.
For years, our parking meters weren't down. They weren't working. People weren't using them because they thought they were in disrepair. And we ordered new parking meters for Main Street and for our parking lots. And we probably doubled to tripled the income, the revenue that we received from those parking meters. The merchants on Main Street are happy because people now come in and leave. We literally have people who would park on Main Street and go to work in New York and train and be gone for 8 to 9 hours per day.
Wow.
Without penalty. That certainly has changed. Main Street is now for customers. They use it. They leave. They pay for their meter time. And so that was one of the most worthy investments that we've had. And then don't forget, we have a police force that goes typically constantly beyond the call of duty and doing the jobs and making sure that we have a good quality of life, that people are moving all along on Main Street, that those violators are being stopped and ticketed. We do have checkpoints that we use as well for safety measure and to control traffic. So a number of ways that we're doing just to promote quality of life, we're generating revenue from it. It's just an important thing. People like it. It generates revenue into our town. Those are kind of smart things that we have to start to do. And we have to think last about taking the money out of taxpayers' pockets. Mm-hmm. Think first about innovative ways to raise money.
Okay, so now you use that T word, tax. So what I want to ask you, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about this whole tax issue thing and see what your thoughts are on it.
Okay? Important item.
Important item, man. People think that taxes are going up. And I did, you know, for full disclosure, I had an opportunity to canvassing with you to hear what residents were saying. And I was listening to what you were saying to them. And so I want you to say the same thing to our listening audience. We'll be right back.
Great.
If you're doing everything right but find it harder and harder to get by, you're not alone. While our people work longer hours below wages, almost all new income goes to the top 1%. My plan? Make Wall Street banks and the ultra-rich pay their fair share of taxes. Provide living wages for working people. Ensure equal pay for women. I'm Bernie Sanders. I approve this message because together we can make a political revolution and create an economy and democracy that works for all and not just the powerful few.
Tuesday, March 29th, this is All Things Political with Eric Dawson. I was able to grab Mayor Warren off the campaign trail from canvassing, which is an incredibly important thing to do during election season, to spend some time with us. So again, I want to thank you for being here. Before we took the break, we were talking about taxes. Now, there are folks, and in fact, I think I saw some literature or some things on social media that alluded to the fact that you raised taxes. Can you talk to our listeners about what their current tax situation is here you know, from your 4 years and what you plan to do?
Yes, I'm proud to say that during my four-year tenure, I have not raised city taxes at all. And if you review your tax bill, you'll see that the city portion of the tax has either gone down or remained the same. We did go through a revow situation where the tax burden has shifted some to people who were paying less initiative, and it gave relief to those who were paying more initiative. It put more of the burden on the commercial district, where I think it belongs, and often the homeowners. But you'll see you haven't raised taxes. We haven't raised taxes on the city level. But more to the point of taxes is our strategy to drive taxes down.
Mm-hmm.
What we found in our analysis was that the properties that existed in Orange, some are very desirable properties that would be profitable, were being underutilized. And so we started very early on to start a development plan. And that development plan includes development at the train station that's going to come to fruition soon. We'll have a groundbreaking or in a ribbon cutting. You'll see the Highland Avenue train station. You'll see a groundbreaking come there where you'll see luxury residential units there as well. All of that kind of development, Central Avenue, where we developed the old Peppermint site. Public notice to everyone, the Peppermint is
hey,
closed.
Man, I used to two-step there, man. Hey, listen. I used to two-step at the Peppermint, man, and I used to have to walk all the way back home because my father wasn't coming to pick me up.
It is now a distant memory. I had very good times at the Peppermint, but it is gone, and in its place is a very nice development, commercial and residential. It's on the upper end. It's a place that's going to generate revenue for our city. And so that kind of development that has started already, I'm using that to help to stabilize our tax base. And then the next round of development I hope to use to drive down our taxes so that we can actually experience a tax reduction, which we haven't had in a long time. You know, some commercial developments as well. You'll see the Taco Bell up on Main Street. You'll see the supermarket that'll be across the old Peppermint site on Central Avenue. A number of significant developments that are coming to Orange that are driving our revenue. And we're looking for that to drive our taxes down.
Mm-hmm.
But what it also does is increase property values.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see across the board that property values in Orange are increasing across the board. You'll see some areas where houses will go for $700,000-$800,000. And you'll see other areas where they might not go for as much, but the value of that house is multiplied multiple times. So that's the kind of volatile scene you see in the real estate market, and that's how we have to start to look at our municipality when we talk taxes, when we talk property values, when we talk development. We have to look at it from a business sense. The other thing that we did, certainly from a business point of view, was the way we increased our bond rating, and that comes from confidence in our leadership, confidence in our discipline with our finances, how we pay our debt, and how we operate our municipality. And so we achieved the highest bond rating possible. We're enjoying that. That saved us about $500,000 just by itself in terms of the rate that we pay for the debt that we have outstanding. And so those kinds of activities are being watched across the board, whether it be throughout the state or on the federal level, to see that this is a city that deserves some attention. This is a city that deserves the kind of grant dollars, the kinds of resources that are necessary to grow a city into the next century. We realize that we are a part of a regional economy. That includes Newark, that includes East Orange, that goes all the way down Route 280 to some of the richest ports in the world. And we want to play our part. We want to be the little engine that could. Mm-hmm. We have a solid commercial base. We have a vibrant place for our families. And we have good homesteads where we can live in decent, clean neighborhoods.
Okay. So, all right. I got another piece of literature that I'm holding in my hand. And it says that you're a Republican. That you're a Christocrat, right? That's and it has you with a picture of Governor Chris Christie here in Orange, you know, I guess some folks were upset about that, and so they put this piece out about you. I mean, are you a Republican?
I'm a Democrat. I've been a Democrat for 50 years. I just celebrated 50 years, March 2nd. I've been a Democrat all of my life. I was born and raised in the city of Newark, learned my politics in the Southward Democratic Organization under Congressman Don Payne, Don Tucker, my uncle, Assemblyman Willie Brown, some of the most stalwart Democrats that the state has ever known. They taught me politics and taught me democratic principles. I never strayed away from those whatsoever, whether it be my time fighting for the NAACP, whether it had been for senior citizens looking to get benefits for family members. All of the work that I've done, the body work that I've done, signifies democratic principles and what we've learned and what we practice in the Democratic Party. The literature that you see is from opponents who don't have a record, so the first thing you put out is negative. I've always been taught as a Democrat, you look at any Democrat as one, you look at Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, if you go all the way back, the first literature you put out is your record, and what about you is important, and the things that you can do, your qualifications, your expertise, and if you don't have those, you put out negative. So that's what you saw, but the link to Christie was, early on in my administration, I walked in the door. We were $6 million in debt. My library was closing. We had a $1.8 million pension bill. And we were really in a quandary. Do we pay our pension bill? Do we keep our library open? Do we bring our laid-off workers back who are Democrats, who are union workers, who are important to us as a base? And so I made some decisions financially and went to the governor and said, I need a partner. I need the state to be a partner in the development of Orange. And laid out my plan for opening the library, for more parks, and for a recreation center, all of the things that we needed in our town, laid out our plan. And he pledged to be a partner and started to make sure that we got some of the resources to make it happen. And I will partner with anyone, whatever party they're in, whatever position they're in, to make sure that Orange gets all that it deserves. You saw Christie go to President Barack Obama when we had Hurricane Sandy. He did it because we needed resources. He did it because we didn't have it ourselves. And I would do the same thing because I love Orange that much. I think Orange deserves it that much. And towns all over the state make no qualms about going to whomever is in power to get resources from their community. And it's a shame that we don't have the political skill to be able to do the same kind of thing. I have it. I'm going to use it. I'm going to make sure that I use my skill and expertise to benefit Orange, no matter who's in office, Democrat or Republican.
All right. I'm glad you cleared that up. Thank you very much. So now, when we talk about, well, I do want to ask you another question. On the city side, part of what creates issues in urban America, I know, for instance, in Newark and in Irvington, is that you have a lot of abandoned property, you know, residential property. And because those properties are not on the tax rolls, it does provide an undue burden for us to be able to pick slack up. You talked about your plan for, for increasing opportunities on the commercial side. What plans do you have on the residential side to bring some of those abandoned properties back on the tax roll?
There's a provision in the law that we're using right now that will allow us to have developers come in and take those abandoned properties and be able to get them back on the rolls. And so I have developers that are chomping at the bit now to ask to be qualified as designated developers to go into the communities where people live to develop homes, get them back on the tax rolls, and to make sure people are qualified to go in to buy the homes, mm-hmm. and live there and create homesteads. So we're going to do that across the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's now the high time to do it because our real estate market is getting hotter. And we just want to make sure people are qualified and that they're committed to it. And that's part of our screening process. I don't need people to come in and do a cheap job just to rent it out and not be responsible for the property. I'd like people to come in and do a first-class job, get people who want to live in the community, mm-hmm. back into the community and become part of what we do in the community.
All right. Well, I know you got to go, man. Are there any last words? And hopefully we'll get you back on before the election is when?
The election is May 10th, okay. 2016. Everybody go out as soon as the polls open. Vote for Dwayne Warren for mayor. There are 4 more years of progress. We have to continue to move Orange forward. And our campaign is about all of Orange. Everybody should get involved. And once you commit to being involved with Dwayne Warren, we're going to put it to work. We're going to make sure that you're part of your community. And we're going to make sure that you start to see value for what you put into the community.
All right. Beautiful, man. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Kim Gaddy. and I am a candidate on the Newark Unity slate with Leah Owens and Tay Padilla for the Newark School Board, and we are asking for your vote. As a lifelong resident of Newark and proud alumni of Weequay High School, I understand the importance of a quality education in our public education system. As a parent of three, with my youngest currently attending Harriet Tubman, my belief in Newark's public schools has never wavered, nor will it. I have been confronted firsthand with the current realities of our educational system and like so many Newark mothers in our city. I have worked tirelessly to ensure that my children receive the best possible education and passionately believe that no Newark child should ever be denied a quality education. At this moment in our history, we must elect officials who are willing to prioritize our city and fight to empower our parents. It is imperative that we create a unified school board that puts the education of our children over the politics, ideology, or special interests. Together, we will ensure a smooth transition back to local control. We will fight for full funding from Trenton, and we will create effective strategies to confront our school budget. Vote for Kim Gaddy, Leah Owens, and Tay Padilla on April 19 for our children.
This is Eric Dawson, All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, March 29th. I think today we are, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but we're 5 or maybe 6 weeks away from the election here in Orange for mayor. And I want to thank Mayor Dwayne Warren for stopping in before he had to head back out to a coffee clutch. But one of the things that I think is really important, is to have a thing. And when I got the piece, and I got to tell you, I know that Mayor Warren is not a Republican, but I asked the question anyway because maybe he was going to surprise me in telling me that he was. I got to tell you, I firmly believe that. When you're in office, you have to be prepared to work with anybody. I think one of the challenges in Newark, at least starting off, was that when the mayor of Newark ran, he ran opposing everybody. He ran opposing Governor Christie. He ran opposing Joe D. Now, look, to be clear, you may have some ideological differences with them, but the fact is you have to be able to work with them if they are the people who are in power until such time that you have the ability to remove them from power. But if they're going to be the power structure that's controlling the purse strings, both at the state and at the county level, then it behooves you to be an elected official who's not servicing your personal agenda or your personal ideology, but that you're rather looking out for what is in the best interest for all of those people who have voted you into office. The last thing that I want to talk about, and I'm sorry he had to go, but I encourage everybody to go back and listen to last week's episode when we had Mayor Voss on. Oh, and by the way, next week, we're going to have a freeholder, Brendan Gill, on All Things Political. So I'm excited about that. We'll be talking about things that have taken place on the state level and things that are happening here in Essex County. I know that freeholder Gill is with U.S. Senator Booker, actually right down the street from me in Montclair at a book signing. Wish I could have been there, but I really wanted to hold the appointment to do the interview with Mayor Warren. But I think that it is imperative that as we move forward to elect, you know, folks in the office, that we know that they have the acumen to be able to do the thing that is necessary in our best interest. My hope is prior to May 10th, I'll be reaching out to the campaigns of both Janice Morrell and Kerry Coley to see if I can get them on the line to talk about their candidacies. But back to Mayor Voss. When we talked last week, he talked about $700,000 that he was able to garner in new revenue from tickets. My hope is that every town, Orange, and I'm going to press as well as double parking. I think that all of those things should be taken into consideration, and folks should be ticketed for them, because a smaller crime leads to lower crime. Is my thinking. When we come back from commercial break, we'll have a conversation about the Newark School Board election. We'll be right back.
Newark parents, my name is Jody Pittman, and I am running for the Newark Public Schools Advisory Board on April 19, 2016, line A7. We cannot allow politically driven candidates to pretend they are the voice of Newark's parents. We, the parents, must stand up and vote for the candidates who represent parents and children. Politics has ruined our district, so let's take it back by voting on April 19, 2016, A7. Jody Pittman. Thank you.
Beyond that, they're going to look to make more community schools. Here's my question. If you're taking these six schools and you're turning these six schools into community schools, and you recognize that these resources need to be made available to students, what about the other schools? So you're going to wait. And so my question is, if you're going to wait, then what is your, how do you propose your argument for charter schools when you say, well, all of the kids don't have access to charter schools? You have traditional public schools and you have the other ones. Well, here's the same situation, right? It's not equitable, so you have to start somewhere. So I don't have, you know, I don't particularly have an issue with trying things that are going to work. All I'm asking you to do is be more consistent when you talk about, you know, your argument for why we should not have charter schools. Because those same resources that are going into these community schools, those resources could be spread across the district to help these failing traditional public schools, according to your argument. Anyway, I'll see you guys again next week, next Tuesday. As I said, we'll have Freeholder Brendan Gill. I'm looking forward to a spirited discussion about things that are going on a national level, on a state level, on a county level, and most certainly on a municipal level. This is Eric Dawson. Another episode of All Things Political.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for All Things Political.